Welcome to Starving the Rush On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I've been SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have talk guests every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talks website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. Or you can also look for SFU on call or Starfleet Universe on call. Or if you want the best online experience, yes, you need to go to twitch.tv. Yes, twitch.tv/SFU on call, where you'll find us there and you'll be able to join the chat room and join the other people there and the wonderful chat room community. And I actually do pay attention to what's going on there. So you post something there, I most probably will respond to it, assuming it's targeted for me. Moving on, going forward, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me there. That's Twitter or X or something other. I can't remember these days. You know, they keep changing it. And that's going to be sfuoncall. Also, if you want to follow my personal account, that's Paul Franz, PAULFRANZ. There's no T in that. And also, Franz Games is for my business account, FRANZGMES. Again, no T. And of course, this lovely talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Of course, also on YouTube for those of you who like to listen or watch on YouTube. Some quick news from A to B this week. Of course, we have Steve Petrick. He's still working on the Orion Master Starship book. And nothing else seems to be happening at the moment. Obviously, one thing actually that was mentioned on social media, i.e. Facebook, that is that A to B is starting to have to restock certain items because they're running out. And unfortunately, because they're running out, they have to repurchase them. It's going to cost them more money, which means they have to raise the prices. They've been trying to avoid it as much as possible, but you know, when they have to restock, they have to pay more money, outlay more money. That means they have to make up that extra money somehow. They can't just have less profit, because otherwise they will not be running a business at all. So just a reminder about that. Also, this week on Found in the Online Store is Name a Starship. Yes, you can name your own starship. Yeah, they're $5 each. Then you give it to someone that you love very much. You can name a starship in the Starfleet universe after them. For $5, you can name a starship after your wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, cousin, second cousin, third cousin, whatever. For $10, you can name for each one of them. You know, $5 for each. You can name a starship or any or all women, men in your life, or any object of your admiration. Also, for only $5, ADB will name a Federation Starfleet auxiliary cruiser after them and send you a cheesy laser-printed certificate commemorating this fact. Even better, ADB will record the starship name in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office when they get up to 500 of them. And actually, you can pick any empire or species for your ship, and you can name it after anyone, even a beloved pet, other than a public or historical figure. So, if you want a neat birthday gift, or, I'd say Christmas gift, but I think it's a little late for that. Obviously, if you don't mind a belated Christmas gift, hey, go for it. Moving onward and forward, SFB Online Tournament, the Sapphire Star 15 tournament has been completed, with the winner of it being Peter Bakia. Flying the Gorn defeated Jeff Clark in the ISC in the finals. Big surprise there that it was in the finals. When it comes to FedCom, nothing happening there. Starfleet Warlord Not much happening there, though. You know, we there's a little one more correction on the website. You know, it's minor little correction. Another person found that one of the links was faulty, which I corrected immediately. So thank you. I think it was Sean Lang, Long, sorry, Long. And thank you for pointing that out. And I was able to fix that quickly. Moving on to the library, when it comes to that, no progress there. And that's my fault. I know I just got pinged by Frank saying, hey, have you gotten around to actually adding that to the library? And I have not. I apologize. I should be able to have time if I just got to remember to do it over the next week because I'm off of my day job. So I should be able to work a little more on that stuff, you know, here, there stuff. I have some other stuff that I need to get done that are, you know, is none related to SCP Online or Starfleet Warlord, which is, you know, family business. So anyway, with that is the news for this week. Then that's me, it's Noel L. Poffins, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got Gary. Say hi, Gary.
Hello, guys.
And we have Doug. Doug's here. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug. Cetera.
One of these days, I'll actually remember to turn down the volume before I start everything. But, yeah, I don't think many people heard it. But anyhow, Merry Christmas. It's, you know, that time of year, and the Christmas will be here in like 4 days. So, Merry Christmas to all. And because, well, Hanukkah is over, and I don't even know when Kwanzaa is, to be honest. So, but anyhow, before I start on my topic for tonight, I was Gary, is there anything particular you want to discuss or mention?
Well, a few things actually. One is you might have heard that now it's not technically Starfleet Universe or Raiders, but it's worth keeping an eye on nonetheless because the mothership is looking like they're going to be they might be trying to do a merger with Warner Brothers Discovery. So if that actually goes through, it'll mean that Warner the franchise and Babylon 5 will, for the first time, be under the same family of IPs.
Wow. That'd be cool.
Which is ironic because when you think about it, A Call to Arms was originally created by Mongoose to be a Babylon 5 game before it became A Call to Arms Noble Armada and then became A Call to Arms Starfleet. So it's kind of like a not quite full circle, but like maybe a three-quarter circle.
True. That's gotta love it. Just the whole tale, you know, the whole story and so forth, it goes along with that, you know. It's like ADB and Task Force games and all that, you know. But anyway.
And also, I can report that the current version of the client, because
Oh crap. I lost Gary. Dang it. I think I know what he was going to mention. I'm just going to wait for just a moment for him to come back because, and if he doesn't come back, then I will mention it myself. I'll give him just a moment here. Yeah. And one thing actually, okay, no, I know what I'm going to say, but the problem is I say it, then I'm just going to beat Gary to the punch because of I know what Gary has been doing for the past week. So we lost you there, Gary.
Yeah, the line cut out for some reason. I don't know what happened there. But I was just going to say that there's different versions of Linux. They're able to basically run different programs and so forth, like, say, printer drivers and other kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
But Steam OS, which is what the Steam Deck uses, it's got the operating system is read-only by default.
Right.
And what that means is basically, for anyone who's not familiar with it, the Steam Deck and certain other like Linux-based devices have desktop modes where you can basically hook it up to a monitor and you can output as high as 4K, although 1080p is usually fine.
Right.
And you can use it as if it's a computer, like it's got like a different, like Mozilla Firefox, and you can install PDF readers and Office Suites and so forth. And but the way that you do it is basically there is a, it's like an App Store or Google Play, but it's called the Discover Software Center.
Right.
And that is basically, each of the programs that are on it are in a thing called a flat pack, which is kind of like basically the same way that you install like an app onto an iPhone or an Android phone.
Right.
And you just click the thing you want, it installs it all at once, and then you run it, and away it goes. Basically, you either do that, or what you do is that if you're in the Steam client, you can actually download the Windows version of a game that's supported by Steam's Proton compatibility layer. So basically, it's a way that you can play games that ordinarily are designed to run on Windows, but you can run them on Linux using the Proton thing.
Mm-hmm, right.
So it has to be one of those two options. So basically, now if no one actually who's giving you money for the client cares about this, that's perfectly fine. So I wouldn't want to create work where none is needed. But on the off chance that there is someone out there who is considering getting a Steam Deck, or because in the long run, Valve have said that they're going to increase the range of devices that Steam OS is compatible with, because they said that now that the new OLED model Steam Deck's out, they want to make Steam OS available easily for any other portable PC. Like if you've ever heard of the Rogue Ally or the there's like a Lenovo Legion. They all look the same kind of form factor, like look like a Nintendo Switch, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But those machines run on Windows 11. And Windows is not optimized for a handheld experience the way the Steam OS is. So in the long run, Valve wanted to make it easy to dual boot the device to have Steam OS and Windows if you want. Because technically, you can do the same right now with a Steam Deck. You can dual boot it to be Windows if you want to. So in the long run, they want to do that. But in the long term, they want any computer, like a desktop or laptop, to be able to function as a Steam OS device. You can do it yourself right now, apparently, but it's like kind of awkward because there's all sorts of stuff you have to go through.
Mm-hmm.
But Valve wants to make it more seamless in the future. So maybe 5 years from now, there'll be maybe 10 times the market that there is now, beyond just the people who have a Steam Deck, if Valve's plans work out. But if they don't, well, we'll see. But if they do, it'll mean that there'll be a much bigger chunk of people who will have that distribution of Linux available to use. So on the off chance that any of them are giving you money for annual SFB online or Fed Compromise subscriptions, or who might consider doing it, then a flat pack might be, version of the client might be useful for them.
Yeah, you emailed me about that earlier this week. I think it was this week. And that's one thing I'll definitely be looking into, which is what does it take to distribute the client as a flat pack. Also, one thing I'd like to look into, if they have anything that's special, you know, it's one of the things I'm wondering if I can try to support the Steam Deck without buying a Steam Deck. You know, if I can, I'd like to save the money.
The flat pack. Just to jump in for a second. Technically, flat packs work for many distributions.
For Steam OS. Oh, I know. There's multiple.
So if anyone who I don't, yeah. So just to make sure that you don't have to say this is only on the Steam Deck, because when you're on the desktop mode, you basically OS still considered to be like just PC hardware with certain quirks. Like, for example, if you're only using the Steam Deck screen, it outputs to a certain resolution because that's all the monitor can handle. So it doesn't give you any other options. But if you plug an external monitor in, you've got the full range of options as if it's a Windows PC or whatever. You basically say you want 1280 by something, or you want 1024 or whatever. So at that point, basically, I don't think a Flatpak has to be explicitly written with the Steam Deck in mind. So I don't believe that. But yeah, like, I don't want to, because I mean, you can always reach out to Valve. The Valve have a very active community thing, like where they help developers like put stuff on it. But I don't think you need to have one in order to get like the application working, if that makes sense.
Right, right. Yeah, but this is, well, this is the thinking I was thinking. This is the thinking that was coming through my brain, which is, of course, minimalistic. Yes. All I needed to do to get it on a Steam Deck would be to make it available as a flat pack, which in theory I should be able to do without, you know, I'd have to actually look to see what Linux distributions currently support flat packs, which is, and I could set up a VM on my machine and test it out that way. That's not the part where I'm wondering if I need a Steam Deck or not. And that is, if I want to have it so that the client can actually be used on the Steam Deck directly for like certain things. I.e., like for the joysticks, you know, the controllers that are on the Steam Deck, have it so that you can use the controllers to control, you know, the ship and so forth. But you know, the problem with part of that is going to be just that. With SFB, it's not designed to be interactive like that. A lot of it is entering in numbers, you know, for the EA, selecting what, you know, selecting the kind of drone you want to load up in the ship. Selecting that, maybe even loading up, okay, what kind of plasma torpedo you're gonna have and what launcher and so forth, you know.
If I may, that shouldn't be a problem.
Well, there's a few different ways that you can approach that. Right. One of them is you can get a thing called a Steam Deck dock. Now, there are third party docks, for PC, fine. The one from Valve actually comes with a second AC adapter, which is pretty handy as well. Usually, like the official one from Valve, it's got three regular USB slots in the back, so you can plug in a keyboard and mouse, but the Steam Deck has Bluetooth, so you can always use Bluetooth keyboard and mouse if you like. And it has a HDMI and a DisplayPort out. So if you have a DisplayPort monitor, or if you have a portable HDMI monitor, you can plug either or both of those into the Steam Deck. So you can basically turn it into more of a desktop environment. So
right.
At the bare minimum, in terms of development costs, if the person who has the Steam Deck and has the dock and the mouse keyboard, basically, if they're getting that stuff, they're probably wanting to use the Steam Deck as their replacement PC. Then all you need to do is basically make sure that the interface is the same as it is on a Windows or Mac or on a different distribution of Linux that is on a desktop or laptop PC by default. Then everything should work fine in the sense that you don't have to reinvent the wheel too much. Now, in terms of using the actual Steam Deck's controls, there are two and a half different ways to approach that. So one of them is you don't have to run the Steam client all the time on the Steam Deck. But when you do run it in the background, there's actually a function within the client itself that you can manually adjust what the various trigger and touchpad and joysticks do. And the only thing is that the actual operating system forgets that when you disable Steam. So when you don't have it on, for now at least, it knows that the right trackpad is what you think is the mouse, but then it gets confused about the other controls, whatever. So that you have to kind of dig more into the Linux distribution thing, whatever, to try to figure it out. But there's an even other way of approaching it, because the Steam client itself has a feature which allows it to import games Windows executables, basically, that are not by Steam directly. And when you have those installed, if you can get them to run, then that also gives you the option where you can basically click the control wheel, the cog rather, and then you tell the Steam Deck, when you're playing this, running this app, what the controls are going to be for that app. So in theory, you could ask Valve if there's a way that they could basically support the Windows version of the client directly in the Steam app and allow it to map the controls that are required for the actual Steam Deck as a handheld to the various functions that you would use while playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
So that is another thing that you could try if you want to. I'm not saying that you would, because I suspect that most of anyone who wants to use the client is probably going to have the mouse and keyboard anyway.
Right.
But if that is a route that you wanted to go down, then there are different ways to approach it that may or may not work, depending on how much time and money it's taking for you to do it, relative to the reward that you're getting at the end.
Understood. Actually, that's one thing I should look into also, is just to see what kind of controls does Java support itself. And definitely, the one thing it definitely makes me think about, which is it possible? I know some of the stuff, it's not as possible, but some of that I think might be possible, which is if there's a way to maybe have like a simplified interface for the client, one that you don't, a lot of some of the functionality you don't need, you don't see, you know, when it comes to like the drones, so, yeah, you have a, you can set that up, you know, maybe have a special version, which is basically kind of a tournament only version of the client, which simplifies, you know, gets rid of a lot of the UI itself that is not really needed in that case. You know, there's extraneous stuff, which is nice to have. I'm not sure how many people use it, but it's nice to have. For example, part of the client itself is the tracking of things like, oh, how much crew you have, how many T-bombs you have, how many boarding parties you have. This kind of stuff, when it comes to the tournament, you don't need. You know, those,
unless they ever put a soldier cruiser in the tournament, so in case you'll need the crew units.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Understood. But for the most part, you know, even a soldier case, I'm not sure if they would, if it was in tournament play, I'm not sure if they'd actually have that as an active rule in tournament play. Actually, one thing I'd have to ask Barry about, because of that's one thing that I know he's, because the soldiers are Omega, correct? Yeah.
So, they are, yes.
Yeah.
But, they've got the whole thing where they have these the vampire shards. Oh. They look like a fighter, but they can attach to your ship, and then they drain the life energy from your crew, and they use that to replenish their shields.
Oh, geez. Well, you can, I would think that in that case, there might be a rule, you know, for tournament play only, where, you know, you wouldn't be, wow. Oh. You know, you could actually could kind of drain the crew, but it wouldn't affect the other player, the way the other player ship operates. You know, so it would still give the soldier that capability. It's just that wouldn't affect the what the who the soldier is fighting. I would think that'd be a possibility in that case.
Even more of an issue is that, historically speaking, once a ship has a black shard attached, it can't remove the shard itself. A friendly ship has to shoot it off, which can be a bit of awkward, of course. But basically, like, or some sort of ship that has its own fighters.
Right.
Fighters could try to shoot at the shard, but if you don't have that, then that could be a problem. So, because they weren't really designed, they were designed to be kind of like the Andromedans, kind of like where you need kind of like a squadron to go up against them and so forth. Like, they're not really duelists in the same sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I can imagine that they could be a bit of a hassle. So.
How much damage did you have to do to the black shard to get it off your ship?
It's got one of those things where, like, I can remember, it's like, anyway, but I don't have the SSD in front of me.
Okay.
But
okay.
Another way to get rid of the back shard is to destroy the ship at the back. It's connected to. So.
Right.
Or
right.
Move more than 35 hexes away from the ship, because once you're 35 hexes away, or 36 hexes or more
right.
away, the shard just crumbles to dust because it breaks the connection to the mothership.
Right.
So
right.
I guess if you're playing on a tournament map that's more than 35 hexes across, mm-hmm. you could try to run as fast as you can and break the link that way.
Yeah, you can do it. It's hard to do. I have to agree there. That's hard to do. Because I'm sure you realize that all the 35 hexes is the maximum controlling radius for controlling drones. If the target ship goes is more distant, it's more than 35 hexes distance from the controlling ship, meaning that I'm talking about drones here, not self-seeking self-guided plasmas, then at 35 hexes, boom, those drones then get dropped because they can no longer be controlled.
A quick thought on that. It's two things. When I just, because you're in a fishbowl and it's tournament rules and it's a special thing for one specific ring, why not just cut it in half? Cut that range in half.
Right.
So you have a chance of being able to do it. And the other might be allowing, and this is drastic, but allowing running into the wall to destroy it too.
That is true. That actually is a good question, is what happens if the ship hits a wall?
Whatever you want it, you make the rule.
Yeah. I
would say just break it right there on the spot. Because that's a drastic downgrade of a capability for the ship that hits the wall for a temporary thing.
Happy module. I'm just going to see if I have. Okay. That's probably a fool's errand. I was going to see if I could open up the module T2000 or these are the SSD books, and see if they actually mention it. But my guess is they wouldn't mention it because it's Omega, and that's because I know I forget. Yeah. Damn, I forget about tractor beams. On whether if you push, if you push the ship into the wall, that breaks the tractor beam. But if you're the person being tractored and you hit the wall yourself, it does nothing to the tractor beam. Tractor beam still stays.
No, it doesn't. It's the other way around. If you're tractoring somebody, the target ship
right.
hits the wall, the tractor beam is broken.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. Well, it depends on who. Yeah, but Doug, it depends on who's actually going into the wall. Are you being forced into the wall by the ship that's tractoring you? Or are you running into the wall?
I don't think it matters. Honestly, my recollection of it is, and it could be flawed. I mean, you can look it up.
Hmm?
I don't have that rule anymore since that got washed in the movie 3 years ago, 4 years ago. But It's basically the rule that I remember is if you are the tractor chip and you hit the wall, it doesn't matter if you're slammed into the wall or you voluntarily run into it, you break the tractor. However, if you are tractoring somebody and you hit the wall, you don't break the tractor to the other ship unless it hits the wall too. That's just my recollection. I could be wrong.
Understood.
And also, when you're looking at going into Linux, a lot of what he was saying is spot on. And the thing is, you don't have to use the Steam controllers. You can launch something through Steam, and it'll be run by Photon, and you have to make sure you have the Photon installed as well. But the you can close Steam once you launch the game. It'll run in the background, and Photon will act as the interface with Wine, I believe it is. But you could also try to set it up to use it with Lutris or Wine directly as well. I mean, and to totally avoid Steam if you want.
Yeah, and the obviously the problem with Wine is Wine is limited.
Well, yeah, but it's the base of what these other programs are going to use.
Steam
doesn't just run the game by itself.
Mm-hmm.
It launches the game for you. It interfaces with Photon. Photon, basically, if I recall correctly, goes, it's like a Wine interface.
Mm-hmm.
Or it uses Wine. I forget which exactly it is. I mean, I just did it a few weeks ago.
Right.
And I got used to sort of work, but I basically have to upgrade the machine for it to work properly.
Understood. Yeah, I have to look. I'd actually have to look more into how Proton does its thing, but my guess would be that when it comes to what's the accelerator for Windows?
No idea.
What?
I have no idea. Sorry.
But DirectX, that's what I'm thinking.
Oh, yeah.
Versus like OpenGL.
That's actually where the name of the Xbox comes from. Because originally it was the Direct Xbox, and then they just shortened it to Xbox.
But yeah, my guess is that Proton connects in, emulates, the API for DirectX. Versus Wine does it for the rest of the operating system. Okay, what is it, goofball? I love you. Hold on.
Thank you, man.
Excuse me.
You can take him.
Say goodbye. Goodbye, people. Bye bye. Yes, I know the local city is coming to say hi, but definitely. Okay. You can stay here. Just don't bother me. He's over here. Let me adjust my camera a little bit. I was previously having it. For those who are watching, you actually could see him on top of the printer. But now he's over here, so he's no longer on the top of the printer, so there's no reason to have the printer as part of the view. But anyhow, the one thing actually that brings up the possibility, actually, as I said, is the whole idea of a simplified interface, and I'm not sure how many people would appreciate it. But I got some ideas for the one of them. As for those of you who know the client, the one thing that currently we have is, of course, is the game control window. And the game control window actually is quite nice because it will show all kinds of information about the ships. How many moves they've made since their last turn? What is their current speed? What's their current location? When it comes to Some information? I'm not so sure. Location is actually that important because you should be able to see the location on the board. Though, you know, it is what it is. And then, of course, there's the, some other windows which I think are a little more important, i.e. there's the range window, which you can bring up, and then it will track the range between two different objects. Whether it's just it's two different units, or like one unit and a hex location, you know, so you can actually always keep an eye out and see how far are you from this one location. You know, I've actually never used the location feature myself, just because of I'm usually not worried about that. I'm usually more interested in what is the current range to the enemy ship. That's usually what I'm looking at for that. But anyway, you know, obviously one thing that could be done for that is when if you just have the board on the screen and down the bottom allow you to have the information about the ships that you can add in. So instead of having it as a pop-up window, it could actually could be just a little area down the bottom of the screen. Could have it as a pop-up window. You know, I'm trying to think about ideas of what can I do to the client to make it more modern. But talking about the Steam Deck, it makes me think about, okay, what happens if I can make it so that most of the interactions that can occur could actually be done via controllers, you know? So basically that would mean simplifying the interface greatly. For example, you know, turning, for the controllers, you can actually have it so that you turned it in the case of like the Steam Deck or a normal controller. You've got the L buttons, like the L and R buttons, I think it is, that are for those of you, you know, do you have it? It's at the very at the top of the controller that you can click. Hold on.
Shoulder buttons.
Yeah, I'm. For those of you, here is my Nintendo Switch. I got a light version, but as you can see here, you've got the two Joy-Cons here, but up top here, you can see these buttons. The idea, what I was thinking of with those top buttons, is either hold them down or click on them to basically have them sort of like use those for side slipping. You know, while when it comes to turning, you'd use something like this over here. This joystick, which has, you know, right, left, up, down, you know, turn, go straight, up, turn right, go right, left. The going down would mean basically heading directly aft. Now, makes some things more difficult because of there are more than four directions in SFB or in FedCom. Because it's hexagonal maps. Hexagonal hexes. They're hexes. So that means they're hexes, which means I want to say 2, 3, 4. It's actually 6, isn't it? Yeah, 6. The hex was
maybe you'd want a variant of the client that like if you're using a controller, because the thing is that the Steam Deck also is able to connect Bluetooth controllers and so forth, or USB ones. But what you could do is that you could have a version of the client where the camera, so to speak, is always set to the top of the ship, so that instead of the counter turning 60 degrees, the map turns 60 degrees, but the the angle at which you see your ship is the same. Because when you're doing that, it would make more sense to be able to move it back and forth, left and right and so forth with the controllers. But if the screen is not moving and the actual counter is turning, you could do it that way, but it might not be quite as intuitive, if that makes sense.
Right. Understood. Okay, I'm taking a look. This is old. This is really old. I'm looking at an old post on Stack Overflow. It's a 5-year-old post about game input into Java. Looks like it actually is a third-party library, is what it is. I don't see anything else at the moment.
But one of the handy things about the deck is that you can set it to be dual screen as well if you want. So, like, if you want to only use like the external monitor and have the Steam Deck's own screen deactivate, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But say, for example, if like in theory, if there was a Flatpak or some other way to get the client working, somebody could basically prop the Steam Deck to the side and leave like a PDF reader, so they've got the master rulebook or they've got like the PDF or Module T up on the Steam Deck screen. And you could have the actual main external monitor would be where you're playing on the client. So it's basically increasing the amount. It's the same. It's basically almost as if like you're doing the same sort of thing with a regular PC or with a laptop where you're plugging it externally. But it's form factor wise, it's giving you a distinct set of options. So I don't know if that's something to consider or not. Like that isn't necessarily anything you need to worry about in terms of the client itself, but more in terms of the broader environment.
Right.
That the client would be running in.
Right, right. Well, definitely could. I could try doing that anyway, even if I don't have the controllers. Let's see how. Because that was one of the things I was doing over a year ago now, when I was actually working on updating the client, which was the whole idea of taking all of the options that I have in the menus, especially the menus, and some other places, and removing them because of they weren't used. For example, one of the options which I removed a while back, which was the ability to record a game. I.e., you could actually have it so it recorded the game, recorded the movements, recorded damage, and all this kind of thing, and it actually would you would then be able to play it back. You know, you load up, you know, you start up a game window, and then you would load the recording, and then it would just play the game through. You know, adding the pieces and so forth. Don't remember if I had it interacting with the chat or not, but you know that I think actually it did, because our chat room is actually an event. All the different chats, you know, text is also an event, so I could record the event and save that as part of the record. That's one of the things I removed, because I felt like no one was using it, so get rid of it, get simplify it, which is part of what you want to do with a game. Is you want to have it so you have the minimalistic. When it comes to number of controllers, number of options, you don't want to have options which are superfluous, or more importantly, just confuse people. As the saying goes, options are great. Too many options are awful. Basically, I know it goes something a little different than that, but basically that's the context, which is you want to give people options, because people like options. They like, but you know, you're talking about options which are like 10 options versus 100 options. You know, 100 options are way too many options. You know, you want 10 or more like what you want when it comes to a list of possibilities. You want keep the list of possibilities down to a bare minimum. So, you know, in that case, that's why you would not want to, that's why I wanted to cut back on the menus, which is, as I said, one of those things, to cut back on those things so that, okay, it makes it easier to use the client. So, and as I was, I've been discussing this evening so far, which is the whole idea of making it so that get rid of as many windows as possible, obviously, being an SFB or FedCom, you need to do energy allocation. Even in FedCom, there's energy allocation. And that's one thing that's still to this day. And I'm sure people who've listened to me long enough know where I'm going, which is, I think that was one of those things that they got wrong when it comes to FedCom. You know, that was one of those, they attempted to simplify it. Well, the problem with FedCom is as soon as you actually added an actual energy allocation, that's not something simple. It's like, okay, set your beginning speed. And everything else is you fly by the seat of your pants and you use your energy as you need it. You know, i.e., you don't have to do a lot of tracking. You just got to know, did you fire your weapon this turn or not? After they, because the problem, of course, that involved why they had to add an actual energy allocation was because they're converting basically SFB weapons to FedCom weapons. They're trying to simplify it, cut back on the number of pages, because Lord knows if you ever actually looked at the number of pages in the rule book for SFB versus the number of pages in FedCom, they're a lot smaller. That's because of a lot of those interactive rules. I'll call them interactive. Well, they're more like better, maybe interrelated. The whole idea of defining exactly the interactions between the different weapons, which is defined explicitly in SFB versus FedCom, where it is defined, they say, well, do what makes sense, which actually makes sense, especially given, how many years ago has it been now since FedCom came out? What, has it been 15 years? Probably more than that. Actually, no, I'm sure it's more than that.
It's been a while.
The Klingon Border, I'm pretty sure, came out in 2005.
Wow. Okay, so it's not been too bad. It's only been 18 years. Okay. I thought it was longer than that. But anyway, so it's 18 years. That's still pretty long. But anyway,
there actually was something else. Well, one and a half other things I wanted to bring up. I know we don't have too much time because people are going to want to get ready for the holidays. But are you on the FedCom forum right now?
I haven't been checking it lately. It's a rare thing these days.
True. But if you can go on there for a second and scroll down to the very bottom where you see the off-topic stuff.
Yep, I'm going. You mean outside the Starfleet Universe realm? Yeah.
That's cool, yeah.
I see a couple of posts from you. Battletech Alpha Strike box set and Steam Deck.
Yeah, so the Steam Deck one is basically just tying into the conversation that we're already having. So it just like gives you an idea of what some of the accessories. Of course, there's tons of different accessories in DevFort, so this is just like a very small like sample of what those can be. But the other one actually is part of another topic, which of course will be too big for a brief thing. But I did want to mention that you were talking about options, because the box set is very clever. If you click that link, if you want to take a minute to look at the Steam Deck one, that's fine. But if we get to the Alpha Strike one, there's a couple of things, both it and to do with YouTube, that I wanted to run through real quick if we have a bit of time later.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay, the miniature-wise, the Alpha Strike box set includes 8 Inner Sphere battle mechs. Cool. As well as 5 the Clan Omni-Max. Cool. So you actually started to paint them?
Yeah, it's not a great job so far, but I basically stole the idea from the Charon and Volta ships I did before for Shapeways, because basically I kind of stumbled upon the color I was going to use for the Volta, because I tried with the yellow and then I put the red wash on top and it came out with a nice orangey. And a lot of the Omega maps have the Volta in orange instead of red, like in terms of the hexes that they cover. So I figured that would be a good way to show that they're like the Mesurons, but different. So I kind of basically borrowed it for the next one you see there. But this is just a prototype. I mean, I haven't started on the rest of the box in terms of painting, because I want to try to figure out the scheme I want first. But the point I wanted to get at is, well, two minor points, because one of them is following the thing you just said about the option thing, is the box is actually very clever, because it comes with these unit cards for each of the mechs that are in it. Now, as you know, as you can imagine, BattleTech has tons of varieties of different mechs
Oh
within
yeah.
the game system.
Oh yeah.
And there's a website called the Master Unit List, where you can actually get the unit cards for Alpha Strike for thousands and thousands of mechs, of different units, including all of the varieties that are currently available as record sheets for the mechs that are in this box. So, for example, if you have the miniature for the clan, the Timberwolf, there's like about 10 or 12 different varieties of it. But the box doesn't give you all 12, it gives you two of them. And basically, one of the varieties is on the front of the card, and the other one is on the back. So it's basically giving you your first choice, so to speak, in the sense of, here's two varieties of this mech. Others exist, but try these two first. And then similarly with all the other ones that are in there too. So it's basically giving a player who's never tried Alpha Strike or at all, it's basically giving them a taste of the broader choice that's out there, but they're not throwing it at them all at once. They're basically easing them into it. So I think that's a very clever way that Catalyst did it in terms of providing a gateway into the universe game tabletop wise with this box set. And of course, the box set is perfectly fine in terms of if you want to use those miniatures for classic BattleTech. You don't have to use the Graphos deck if you don't want to, because it's a relatively cost-effective way of getting those mechs to use for classic BattleTech, even if you never use the Alpha Strike rules. But there's a Venn diagram, the same way that not everyone who plays SFB plays FedCom and vice versa. There's people that like both Alpha Strike and Classic and like one or the other. But as long as the money is going towards Catalyst, they're not going to care. But so that's definitely I think that's worth keeping an eye on. But because just imagine if there was ever a box set like that for an SFU product. But I think Mongoose tried to do something like that with Call to Arms, but it didn't really work the same way. Right. But I guess the point I wanted to get with BattleTech right now is there's a number of guys, mostly guys, because I don't know if there's too many women doing it, but there's a number of humans who are on, have YouTube channels that are doing stories. Basically, they're doing articles about battle mechs and about vehicles and aerospace units, but they're also doing lore videos. So, for example, there's this guy in the UK. He just the earlier this year, he did a combined, I think it's something like 7 or 8 hours video, all about the Star League Civil War, and it's broken down into smaller chunks. So if you want to go through it, like the Amaris Crisis, like step by step. And he's also got other ones. He's just finished one about the First Succession War. And he's drawing from the books that exist about these things and some of the novels and so on. But he's portraying it as if he's doing Ken Burns's job, like talking about the US Civil War or something like
Oh, okay.
that. So it's really interesting. Yeah, it's interesting to see, like, I mean, he hasn't even hit the point where the quote unquote modern era of BattleTech begins, and he's already got like dozens of hours worth of content up there. That just shows like how much material that has been produced for this stuff. But I think that it would be interesting if somebody wanted to do something similar at the Starfleet universe. Because imagine like if there was a 10-part history of the General War, or a history of the Andromedan War, a history of the Omega's First Great War, a history of Andromeda's Concrete Glass Machina Cloud, or a history of the forming of the Federation, or a history of the Constitution class, like all these kind of things. Like, I think that would be, because a lot of people, because this guy who's doing this narrative series made a point of starting at the beginning of BattleTech history, basically where it diverts from real history back in the 80s, he's basically introducing thousands of people who are watching this stuff to this setting for the first time that even a lot of like classic BattleTech or Alpha Strike players would skip over because they jump directly to either the 3025 or maybe to the current L-Clan era of 3150,
right.
3151 rather.
Mm-hmm.
So, or anywhere in between. So he's basically creating a fan base for these eras that's similar, like, for example, like when Starship Battles first came out, no one knew what the earlier ships were like.
Right.
But now we do. But I mean, if somebody was creating a YouTube series that started with the early years, then that audience would see these ships and that would be their first introduction to what a Federation or a Klingon ship looks like or whatever. Or they'd have an idea that, you know, the national fleets for the Feds or the ISC look like X, Y, Z or whatever. And that's, and also just making a point that they're not the same as the ones in Enterprise because ADB can't go anywhere. The franchise goes after 1979.
Right.
Which, of course, is true for BattleTech because BattleTech can't use the... It can use its own takes on certain mechs, but it can't use the unseen art. But it doesn't want to anymore because they want to steer clear of that whole crap.
Right.
So, but yeah, basically, I think that with the right production and the right narration, the right tone of telling it, because some other YouTube channels are more kind of jokey, or well, some are more kind of like uppity, but this guy, I'll use the wrong word, but excitedy, but this guy's very more serious in the sense, like, you know, the kind of way like when you hear a narration of like the Ken Burns' like Vietnam War or whatever it is, it's that same kind of like, this is a serious topic, whatever like that. And I think that basically helps sell it very well, because I think that something similar for the SFU would be a great thing to see someday. So if you have some time over the holidays, I would recommend, there's a YouTube channel, the guy's called Sven Vanderplank, and he's the one who's been doing, the British guy who's been doing this BattleTech history stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Check even one or two of his, the shorter videos that he does.
Right.
And you actually see the way he uses the map of the Inner Sphere, and he uses like the color relations. Like some of the later maps in the videos are better than the earlier ones because they use a black background instead of a white background, so it's easier on the eye. And then also like the way in which he kind of weaves together the narratives that are in the various source books and stuff to help tell the story. And I basically think that there's a lot that can be learned from there in terms of getting people who may not be up to speed with the Starfleet universe, or who maybe would like a refresher course, enthused about what the ADB's universe has to offer.
Yeah, I definitely would like to look to see how he represents it. How he presents it, because of multiple ways of doing it. Obviously, one of those is showing the map. You know, obviously that gives a better idea strategically on that kind of scale. You know, how the history of not the mechs themselves, but of the history of the clans, the houses, and all that kind of thing, and you know how that plays forth in history. Now, I would think that he would also use different pictures, you know, when it comes to maybe whether it's just showing a picture of the symbol which represents one of the houses. And can't remember the houses off the top of my head at the moment. I used to know them, but it's been since the 1990s that I've actually looked at BattleTech, because you know.
So he uses it's actually clever because I don't know if you've ever seen it, but there's actually it's actually a silent, like there's no narration, but there is a video that was released back in 2018 when Harebrained Schemes BattleTech PC game was released, and it's basically it's like a prequel to the game, because the game itself is set in 3025, But the prequel basically tells you the future history of humankind, starting with the first jump ship through to the collapse of the Star League. And he basically uses stills from that game and also music from the game soundtrack, as well as using... Can you hear any of that? Did I get interrupted a minute ago?
Was that?
What?
Yeah, sorry, yeah. So I was just saying, he uses stills and images and music from the game,
mm-hmm.
but he also uses images from the books, like the source books, like portraits of the characters, and also faction logos and information
right.
like that or whatever. So basically, he's pitching the series of videos to people who know BattleTech because of the Harebrained Schemes PC game. But he's also pitching it towards people who know it from playing maybe Alpha Strike or playing Total Warfare or, you know, playing one of the RPG games like the pen and paper ones and so forth. So it's a way of kind of reaching those different streams at once. And I think at least one or two of the compilation videos he's got has got like nearly 500,000 views or something like that. So there's a lot of people watching this.
Hmm? Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. As I said, you know, I'd want to just look to see how it presents it, you know, at least giving me some insight into it and how it might be done. Not saying that I would do it, because Lord knows I'm busy enough as it is.
I don't know. Maybe if you knew somebody who knew how to video edit and stuff. And could read narration and things.
Yeah, what I would do, actually, is get my daughter to do it, since she's a good editor. Though there's a lot of stuff I'd have to work on beforehand, which is that's the tough part, which is of course getting the material together, getting the dialogue together, all that kind of thing. So anyway,
I think to double back to our earlier topic, if you want a device that you can do video editing on, you could always get a Steam Deck.
Well, that is possible. I'm sure the graphical capabilities of the machine is quite nice. You know, the OLED starts at $550. Actually, in the text.
Yeah, you'd want the OLED, because even though they say the performance is the same, it's not, because the interior stuff that's going on in the OLED,
mm-hmm.
it's much more refined compared to the LCD. So it's definitely the superior product if you can afford it.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Yeah, I was just thinking if they have the tech specs, but I can't. They don't have. They have not the. Oh, okay. That's OLED, which is APU, GPU, 8 RDNA, 2 CUs, 1.6 gigahertz, and 1.6 teraflops FP32. How you doing, goofball? And for I clicked on the wrong one. I want to see what the LCD, which is the low end. According to the GPU usage, it's the same thing. My guess is that the CPU is a bit different. Come on. Yeah.
There's a few videos that do a comparison in terms of like explaining where the refinements come,
mm-hmm.
but I can't really express them like off the top of my head. But yeah, if you have a look for like Digital Foundry or Linus Tech Tips and so forth, you'll see they've got various review videos of the OLED, and they go into different benchmarking and other kind of features and stuff that they've done with the OLED relative to the LCD. Oh, and actually, one final thing. It's always important to make sure you get a screen protector for a thing like this.
Mm-hmm.
there are companies that do screen protectors for the LCD model, which actually comes with like a, it looks like the National Geographic logo. It's like a yellow frame you put on the deck, and it frames up the screen for you, the protector for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because the actual bezels on the outside of the screen are the same, even though the thickness of the bezels are thinner because the deck screen is bigger, the OLED screen is bigger, the screen protector for the LCD model will still fit the OLED.
Okay.
So if you do decide to buy yourself a Christmas present, make sure that you get the screen protector to go with it.
Understood. Understood. Yeah, because expensive device. I got to be careful because this is one of those devices I can easily see myself. If I get it, my daughter's going to borrow it, and I'm never going to see it again. Because she plays a lot more video. She plays a lot more videos and video games than I do. What? Hold on. You want to say hello to the folks? Nope, you don't want to say hello. This one's a climb on me. Okay, well, Kitty, local Zinni, goodbye. Uh-oh. Let go, thank you. Okay, with that, I think we'll wrap it up because he's starting getting antsy, and I know why he wants TRAT. And
yeah.
And I have to. I actually have to spell it. Otherwise, he gets quite excited.
Yeah. So hey, 2 months. 2 months to go. The game is a winner, my dear.
Mm.
I throw that out there because it'd be nice to have a GM schedule, maybe.
Yeah, I know.
For everybody listening. Pre-registration is open.
Yep.
President's Day weekend in February. So, yep. There's that. We're looking forward to meeting everybody and seeing people I only get to see in person once every 6 months or so.
Agreed. Yes, and that's Gamers Winner. It's 2024. Gamers and Winner.
And we're going to be at the Red Lion Hotel in Harrisburg, PA.
Yep. So,
7-11.
Hope to see people there. But anybody who's close by, you can stop, at the very least, stop by. You know, if you just want to, you know, say hello, that'd be great just to see and see some of your faces. Because I know there's some people who listen to the podcast that are relatively close by, you know.
There's a ton of SF Beat Players within an hour or two drive.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, you know, getting them out of the woodwork to come in for a weekend. Always been kind of challenging.
Agreed, yeah. But as that, you know, at the very least, it'd be nice to see your face, even if you don't have an opportunity to actually play a game. Many games.
And on the other hand, we have a whole bunch of space. We could do something big or something small, or, you know, captain's game set up with a handful of people. And we got plenty of space to spread out and play.
Yep. Which would be fantastic. Anyway.
You know, I mean,
and of course, Paul, if you go, it'd be a great chance for you to finally bring in that copy of Module C6.
Yeah, well, I've got all the material with me, so at the very least, I can have Doug look at it in February. Hopefully, I can stop by his residence a little bit earlier than that.
That would be nice. Not that I'm a hermit or anything, and you know, could use a visitor on occasion. God damn it, come on by.
Will do.
I wish everybody out there a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays and all that stuff too.
Okay.
Stay driving on the weekend if you're going to see people.
So Gary, you too. You have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Hopefully, I'm not sure if I'll see you next week or not. So definitely have a happy new year if I don't.
Probably not next week. So I guess I'll have to say happy new year and best of luck in the holiday season for you and everyone.
Okay. You too. So with that, I am Paul Franz and I bid y'all a good night.